south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, I get questions all the time about global warming and climate change. And I don't really care what you call it, but you can't change it. There's nothing you can do about it. Some people say it's extremely serious. Others say, well, you know, that's just the way the solar cycles work. I know, global warming's all the rage, right? So was the coming of the next great ice age, I recall. In the 70s, there was a book, a big bestseller. I think it was called The Climate Conspiracy, The Coming Ice Age, which is exactly the opposite of what people are saying today, right? So then, which scientists do you believe? Well, we all know global heating and ice ages come in cycles. You can track them over thousands, even millions of years. And people never somehow discuss the fact that in each and every day, the sun comes up and it's suddenly 10 or 15 degrees warmer than at night. Meanwhile, you got people saying, it's unprecedented. Within 100 years, we predict the average temperature of the Earth is going to go up 1 degree. It's unprecedented. We're all going to die. But that carbon credit system created by fat boy Al Gore, that'll save us, right? Please, carbon credits. Have you ever seen or traded or bought one yourself? No. It's just another manifestation of what George Carlin said. It's a big club and you ain't in it. Oh, those carbon credits. They sound so useful. They sound so green and so ecologically friendly. Old Al Gore should get some carbon credits for all the flatulence he produces from all of his orifices. So then what's it all about? What's the average guy know about carbon credits? Nothing. It just goes to show how little we know and how hard it is to calculate those things, except we do know the glaciers are melting, right? So I'm not going to be a denier. But I will say this, if you're at all concerned about global warming, don't whine, don't blog, don't write letters to the editor. Your absolute best bet is to move to one of the Altiplano regions of the world. Just think of Denver, Colorado, where they call it the Mile High City, right? Not that it's a good place to live. I've heard various opinions. Let's just concentrate on the fact that it's a mile high. Since you lose about 3 degrees or so Fahrenheit for every 1,000 feet above sea level, that means it's about 15 degrees cooler than other regions in the state that are closer to sea level. And it's not exactly 3 degrees per 1,000 feet either. You see, it varies between 3 and 3.5 degrees per 1,000 feet. Depending on the humidity, how dry or saturated the air is. And you hear me talk about the Altiplano in Latin America all the time. There are Altiplano regions all over the place here. Mexico City is in the Altiplano. Few people know that. Of course, I never want to live there for lots of reasons. One of them being they have a terrible shortage of water and the air pollution is beyond irritating. If you've got allergies or respiratory problems at all, you should forget about Mexico City. Though it is a nice place to visit. Think of it. They've got something like 20 million people living in that metropolis. And of course, it's got some really nice, upscale, high-end neighborhoods. But with a severe shortage of water? Water only coming out of the tap 8 or 10 hours a day? In fact, I know of some gringos and expats that live in really nice neighborhoods that have water trucked in to their colony. That's what they call them, colonies, neighborhoods. Every single week, they have a giant neighborhood cistern and they fill it up by truck every week. So water shortages don't matter. If you've got the money, you just buy it by the truckload. But what about the future? What's going to happen when the people who don't have money, what are they going to do when the real rationing begins? But back to the point that there are many places where you have Altiplano in Latin America. As mentioned, Mexico's got a few cities and regions in the Altiplano. Oaxaca, for one. But it's a very dry, kind of high desert Altiplano. Honduras has one or two cities. The capital city, Tegucigalpa, which I'd never want to live in. It's one of the ugliest cities I've ever seen. However, they've got a beautiful little town called Copan on the border of Guatemala. It's got some excellent Mayan ruins. It's calm, safe, beautiful, only has about 20 or 30,000 people. But, you know, because it's a small town, there's no action at all. So you have to be prepared to be bored. Though, as my mom always said, if you're a curious person, you'll never be bored. She was right about that and a million other things. But man, was she wrong about politics. She still votes the Democrat Party line because she thinks spirit of Kennedy is still in there somewhere. Or at least that's what her connection to the Democrats is. But then again, she's 90 years old, so you can forgive her for that. Any person who's still lucid at 90, well, you can forgive them for pretty much everything except their driving habits. Oh, and voting for Obama and the Democrats. Don't get me wrong, I'm not for Trump. I voted for no one. He did have promise, though, at first. He said all the right things, at first, before he got into office, but he proceeded to select the worst bankster Wall Street presidential cabinet known to man. What a massive opportunity lost. Stringing them all up by their thumbs would be an insult to Mussolini. Oh, but there are solutions to the terrible mess politicians have got us into. One is term limits. Just 2 terms, that's it. 1 term in office and 1 term in prison. Or, and this might sound a touch drastic, you call a full session of Congress and drop a small nuke. I know, that sounds pretty drastic because it would destroy irreplaceable historic buildings and statues in the process. Oh well. But where were we? Oh yeah, talking about the Altiplano here in Latin America. For all you guys and gals out there whining about global warming, those are wasted tears because you cannot do a single thing about it. Except either live with it, or move to the Latin American Altiplano. Of course, you've heard me say over and over again that pretty much the entire center of Guatemala is the Altiplano. From the moment you hit the border driving south through Mexico, you hit the Altiplano. And for the next couple hundred miles, you're in the Altiplano. Exclusively. In fact, practically the entire Pan-American Highway as it runs through Guatemala is in the Altiplano. So if you ever want to see what it's like, take that ride. It's beautiful and safe, but I wouldn't do it at night. Not because of bad boys, but bad roads, bad drivers, and bad lighting. Then, after driving south through Guatemala, when you finally hit the border of El Salvador, that's when the Altiplano finally drops off. So, there's a tiny little bit of Altiplano in El Salvador, maybe about 30 miles worth, while following the Pan-American Highway down. It's really beautiful farm and coffee country, too. It's a great place to check out. In fact, it's so scenic, that little stretch is called the Ruta del Flores, the flower route. Because there are so many beautiful tropical flowers and trees that grow in those slightly higher elevations. That would be a great place to live, too, if you're in the mind to relax and ditch the city life. They've got some fantastic little coffee plantations and bed and breakfasts along the way, too. Though, I'd say forget it if you're into hustle, bustle, and nightlife. Then, as the El Salvador Altiplano drops off, still along the Pan-American Highway, you quickly drop down to sea level, and soon enough, you're at Bitcoin Beach and all the other little surf towns that have been so much in the news lately, because they're all using Bitcoin. Speaking of El Salvador and Bitcoin, when my next seminar finally gets underway, we're working on it, we will be spending some time at Bitcoin Beach, and we're planning on visiting that volcano near San Salvador, that's the capital of El Salvador, where, as we speak, they're setting up that country's Bitcoin volcano project. That's what they're calling it. You might remember that in June, the president of El Salvador said the state-owned geothermal electric company would be building additional facilities to mine very cheap, 100% clean, 100% renewable, zero emissions electricity from one of the volcano geothermal stations that's already producing energy now. Meanwhile, did you know that a third of El Salvador's population is actively using its Bitcoin wallet, Chivo? I told you about that in a previous show. That's over 2 million people. And still the world wonders, how do you get people who make and save so little they don't even have a bank account? You know, 70% of El Salvadorians don't even have bank accounts. How do you get all those people who are living on the edge to use Bitcoin? Well, they've all got smartphones, the app's free, and the government's giving them $30 in Bitcoin just to sign up. And the thing is, in order to spend that Bitcoin to buy things, you got to learn how to use the app. So people are lining up to learn. Every town's got a group of Bitcoin go-to guys where locals could go to learn how to use the app. It takes about 20 minutes or so to get them up to speed. Wait a minute. 20 minutes to learn about Bitcoin? Hell, it took me hours and hours. Probably weeks, way back when it first hit the scene. Well, there's been a complete revolution in ease of use since then. As for the users of the Chivo app in El Salvador, they don't have to know a thing about how Bitcoin works, because the app does it all for them. Just like you don't have to know how a motor works to drive a car, or how your cell phone signal works with a cell tower to use your phone. But back to that amazing Altiplano. Colombia is another country that has various spots that are in the Altiplano. All the major cities except Cartagena. That's a port, big beach town. But the other big three cities are in the Altiplano: Cali, Bogota, and Medellin, which means, of course, no heating or air conditioning bills. There are lots of other smaller towns and cities in the Altiplano in Colombia, too. But would I live there? Would I recommend it? Well, I could easily live in Medellin, Cali, or Bogota, though now they're sort of first world expensive. The problem is with the rest of the country. If you're just going to live in the city, hey, that's okay, but I wouldn't want to live in or travel to the boonies. They've got big problems in Colombia once you get out of the big cities. And I don't feel so good about that. It's all about the cocaine, you know, the coca fields. Listen to this, and you'll soon realize why I have my concerns. And just remember, and this goes for Mexico too, things are not going to get any better across the world, you know. But you knew that already, right? So where things seem to be borderline okay today, forget about it when it comes to tomorrow. Let's talk about the boonies of Colombia for a bit. Did you know that in 2016, not so long ago, the Colombian government signed a peace deal with the largest group of rebels waging war? That's the cocaine wars, of course, the FARC, F-A-R-C. It was supposed to be the end of the conflict that had raged for a half a century and killed more than 220,000 people. Man, hell, you don't hear people talking about that up in the first world. That's 220,000 dead just in Colombia alone during the Coke War. You know, in Vietnam, only 50,000 U.S. soldiers died. All right, so far so good, right? Make it so bad. Well, the deal was made in 2015 to get all these farmers, you see, all of them growing coca leaf for a living, to grow food, edible crops. In fact, out in the boonies, coca was the main driver of the economy for years and years, and poor farmers picked it, rebel fighters taxed it, and the narco traffickers turned it into cocaine. Then they ferried it to buyers in Mexico and the States, etc. Now, according to that 2016 peace, the peace deal included a farmer development substitution plan meant to help those coca farmers grow new crops that they could sell in real legit markets. In other words, grow crops you could eat instead of snort. Take a guess how many farmers were supposed to be in that plan. 99,000. Yep, that's 99 with three zeros after it. Who knew there were that many farm families growing coca leaves? So the farmers were supposed to switch crops. The rebels were supposed to turn in their guns. And the government was to offer jobs, roads, schools, and a way to switch over to edible crops, i.e. horticultural training. And the plan was so hailed by idiot first world countries that the lard-ass Colombian president who came up with the plan, Juan Manuel Santos, got the Nobel Peace Prize for it. And these days, that's worth over $1 million. Just like old Vomit got it for pretending he didn't kill people. And then, because it was considered such a great plan, the U.S. and other idiot first world countries dumped billions more into it. And now, 6 years later, according to the Kroc Institute International Peace Studies Group, who are in charge of monitoring the progress of that deal, they've determined that only 4% of the rural reform measures are complete. And 83% of the farmers have not been helped or even contacted at all. Exactly what you'd expect from government, huh? So guess what? Surprise, surprise. After 6 years and billions spent for nothing, the usual suspects got rich, and I'll give you two guesses who. As a result, today in most of Colombia's rural towns, it's back to business as usual. Get this. The little stores and tiendas accept not only Colombian pesos and dollars, but they accept coca leaves and processed cocaine base as payment just as readily as coins and bills. And get this, the 4% of the farmers that actually did get retrained in growing new crops, etc., the ones in the coca crop substitution program, as they call it, yes, they did get retrained and they got fruit trees and other saplings and other seeds for cash crops. And a few obligatory visits from horticultural technicians who were supposed to teach them new skills. And the result, after 2 or 3 years, most of the trees died. The agricultural technicians never came back, disappeared, or were unavailable to help. Well, as it turns out, even the farmers whose crops did come in, their little towns and pueblos are so far away from larger towns and cities where they could sell or offload their crops. Those so-called successful farmers say the bad roads and the rainy season prevents them from getting edible crops to market. They spoil and deteriorate rapidly, whereas coca leaves, you just bundle them up and they stay fresh and potent pretty much indefinitely. No degradation, no storage problem. So in the end, it's a typical government screw-up, or maybe not. Millions, even billions of dollars changed hands. Part of that long-lost drug war, you know. A president even gets a Nobel Prize shades of Ovomit, for such a successful plan that after 6 years of operation, only 7,000 farmers are breaking even, if you could call it that, out of the 99,000 that were supposed to have a productive new legal business. So what you have right now in Colombia is over 90,000 rural farmers out in the boonies growing coca leaves again, just like old times. And the FARC and the narcos have moved right back in. So in Colombia, they've got 90,000 farmers who don't have any other way to make a living except illegally. Which brings us back to the question, is Colombia a good place to have your plan B? Well, you decide. You know, international living has its tops on their list for some time now, too. If it were me, I could live in one of the big three cities in the Altiplano, Cali, Medellin, or Bogota. But that's for the present. If I had to project into the future, I'd say it's a big risk. So for sure, if you were to visit Bogota, Medellin, or Cali, Colombia today, you would see no sign of the FARC or gangs or the cocaine business at all. You'll see nice cosmopolitan cities with lots of upscale development. Of course, they've got their slums too, all big cities too. But there are business districts and residential neighborhoods, etc., that are absolutely first world. So just as with Mexico City, I get people sending me emails all the time saying, hey, I've been to Mexico City. They've got some great, absolutely first world areas there. It's nice, it's cheap, it's cosmopolitan. That's true, but you have to look at the big picture and what it's going to be like in the near future. It's breaking down, believe me. Remember, the world is not getting better. You know damn well we're already down that slippery slope. Why do you think so many people are piling into shows like this? Oh, and for those of you who used to accuse me of being a pessimist, I'm talking about before this COVID-iot thing. Used to get a lot of emails calling me out on that. A doomsday kind of guy. Poor, deluded Johnny. He thinks the sky is falling. Funny how I never get emails like that anymore. And now I get emails from rational, formerly calm, collected people who are genuinely scared shitless about what's happening in their very own communities up in the States. What's up with that? You know, for the last 11 years or so, I've been talking about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great here in Latin America, right? Well, you know, if my show was about the United States instead of Latin America, I'd have to rearrange that slightly. I'd be talking about the bad, the unpleasant, the unacceptable, and the barely tolerable. Because I can't see, regarding the United States, Canada, Europe, practically all first world countries, not much good's happening there. Not anything to be optimistic about. How about you? Although I'm still quite optimistic about relocating to Latin America. Bottom line, if you're planning on getting the hell out of Dodge, unless you're a beachcomber, you should absolutely check out the Altiplano. Funny thing though, most people up in the first world have never heard about it, much less experienced it. Oh, and one last thing for you diehard global warmists, if there is such a word. I've heard people, even notable scientists, throw around certain number of degrees they expect the Earth to warm up in the next 100 years. I've heard anywhere from a half a degree to 2 degrees warmer. Doesn't sound like much at first, but it can be catastrophic, especially if you're living on the coast, considering projected glacier and ice melts. The thing is, though, if you're so concerned about it, remember, you just increase your altitude 1,000 feet, and your average ambient temperature will drop 3 degrees Fahrenheit or so. And the fact is, locals down here don't even call it the Altiplano till you're at least 3,500 feet up. And that's a nice drop of around 10 degrees Fahrenheit versus sea level. By the way, most of the towns and cities that are considered in the Latin American Altiplano are around 5 to 6,000 feet above sea level. That means if it's 90 degrees at midday by the beach in, let's say, La Ceiba or Roatan, Honduras. Now, a couple hundred miles away, there's Tegucigalpa, known as Tegucigalpa down here, the capital of Honduras. It's at the fringe of the Altiplano, around 3,500 feet. At midday, it's around 80 degrees or slightly less. And at night, when it's 75 degrees Fahrenheit on the beaches of La Ceiba and Roatan, that means in Tegucigalpa, 3,500 feet above sea level, it's around 65 degrees at night. Does that sound right for the tropics? Not really, huh? But that's the impression first world people get because, as far as they're concerned, the weather south of the border is always like Cancun, hot and humid, all the time. Well, they're wrong. Now, of course, as you go farther south, down through South America, you got Chile, Argentina, Brazil, you get your four seasons back, only in reverse because it is South America. Oh, and I got to tell you, for all you who are thinking about Paraguay, it's kind of an ugly country. It's flat. And what most people don't know, there's a terrible shortage of water going on. The drought down there has been going on for years. In fact, the country's largest lake is half gone. Evaporated. Not looking good for the future. Oh, by the way, I got a little expat Eddie story coming up for you. Probably be telling that one in next week's show. He's been traveling and he had two events happen to him that are worth mentioning. The kind of stuff that could only happen in Latin America and probably only to him. One of those stories is a robbery story and the other happened at a nice first world resort. All right, yanking the wheel a bit here. You longtime listeners have heard me mention dirty EMF, dirty electricity. I've got my own little, very sensitive, dirty electricity meter. It was around $100 or so, but it serves me well. I can walk around a house, your house, anyone's house, or any building for that matter, and determine exactly where the dirty EMF is. Oh, and if you want to know which meter I have, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. I'm bringing this up because I've been getting some emails lately from people saying, Johnny, you're talking about going off the grid. That means solar panels, inverters, huge batteries, electric cars. So people are writing and saying, Johnny, I understand when you have all that stuff hooked up to your house, and especially if you've got an electric car or Tesla power walls in the house, they're putting out all kind of dirty EMF, dirty electricity. Oh, and by the way, if you have a good EMF meter and you point it at a dirty electricity source, it'll tell you not only the EMF that's present, it'll tell you if it's normal, excessive, or dangerous to humans. By the way, EMF stands for electromotive force. The thing is, electricity does leak out of your equipment, and high levels can be dangerous, but you won't know it and won't feel it. It's not DC voltage you have to worry about, but AC electricity, which is in everyone's outlet, you know, 60 cycles, it switches back and forth 60 cycles per second. And every time it switches, it produces little spikes of electricity that you can't see, but nevertheless, you can detect them with a meter. You can measure them at various distances from the object you're measuring. And there's something called the inverse square law, which means that, for example, if you're 1 foot away from a microwave oven, let's say, and your microwave, while on, is putting out a certain amount of dirty electricity, dirty EMF, if you step 2 feet away, not one now, but 2 feet away, you won't measure half as much EMF as you might think, or dirty electricity. Your meter will measure 1/4 as much. It's called the inverse square law. It's a physical property of rays and radiation, electrical and otherwise. So why mention that? Well, because if at 1 foot away, the EMF is at damaging levels, when you get 2 feet away from the source, oftentimes it can be normal, just fine. Therefore, no damaging effects at all. Now, suppose you decide to move 3 feet away from your microwave. The dirty electricity is 1/9 the force, not 1/3, but 1/9 the force you measured at 1 foot away. Confused already? Well, that's simple algebra. Anyway, you'll find the very dirtiest electrical sources in your house to be, number one, a microwave oven, as mentioned. Yep, you think they're safe, but they're not. I've measured a lot of them with my meter, and really, you shouldn't be standing any closer than 5 feet to a microwave oven. You can buy an EMF meter and prove it to yourself. Nearly all microwave ovens are spewing terribly dirty energy when you're closer than 5 feet. And that's because in time, the doors opened and closed hundreds, probably thousands of times over the years, and the door seals get sloppy and leaky. So technically, a new microwave oven should be a lot cleaner than one that's 2 or 3 years old, but that's not always the case. Anyway, what are the other culprits around the house? Your good old laptop computer puts out a lot of dirty EMF. So the oxymoron there is you should never put it on your lap, even though it's a laptop. Then again, here in Latin America, there are signs everywhere that say, don't put your toilet paper in the toilet. Duh, what's that all about? Well, if you listen to this show, you know what that's about. Now, the thing is, using my little device, I've found I have to be about 2 feet away from my laptop before the EMF readings drop down to normal or acceptable. Same thing with an iPad. And man, most people can't even read the letters on their laptop from 2 feet away. The solution there is to get yourself one of those portable keyboards, preferably not a wireless one. Then you're operating with Bluetooth. That's just radiating on another band and it's putting out dirty EMF too. Though, some are much better than others, and you'll never know until you buy it, bring it home, and use your meter. I know, it's a hassle to have a portable keyboard with a wire, but hey, that's the only way you're going to cut down on the EMF. Oh, and those big screen TVs, they put out some EMF too. But if you're 5 feet away, you're okay. Oh, and here's another dirty EMF apparatus that'll surprise you. The common electric fan. Fact is, anything that's got a motor is going to put out some dirty EMF. And I've got two fans around here, a pretty big one and a small portable one. Both of them put out a ton of EMF, and you have to be around 4 to 5 feet away before the meter registers normal acceptable levels. By the way, my EMF meter reads 3 different kinds of dirty electricity, and it keeps switching itself automatically, showing you all 3 levels and what's normal and what's not. In fact, I've got my meter in front of me right now. I'm 2 feet away from my laptop. Listen to this. Now I'm moving farther away. And at 3 feet, it's gone. I really like this meter because you don't even have to look at it. All you gotta do is set it to audio, and when it beeps, you know something's wrong. It's not normal. When the beeping stops, you're out of danger. Kind of like a Geiger counter. It's a nifty little device. Everyone should have one. Oh, and by the way, I mentioned everything that runs on AC is going to put out some EMF. Whether it's normal or dangerous or not, you need a meter to find that out. Now, I know I've said this before, but LED lights, they're everywhere, right? Well, if they're screwed into an AC light socket, which most of them are, they put out a hell of a lot of EMF. But once you're around 3 feet away from them, completely normal, no problem. But you get close, man, they're just pouring out the dirty EMF. But they're so efficient. And cell phones, I know people are never going to stop using those things. I suggest you only hold it to the side of your brain you don't care much about. You know, they're going to have to solve that one day. The results will come in, and especially kids are doing a lot of damage to themselves and don't know it. It's going to show up later, though. Oh, and, you know, gas and diesel generators, those portable jobs, they put out tons of dirty EMF. You don't want to get near those things. Stay at least 5 feet away from those, too. Oh, and I've been checking out solar systems. Solar panels themselves don't put out any dirty EMF because they're pure DC. The inverters that the panels are connected to put out a lot of dirty EMF because they're switching the DC to the AC so that you can use it in your house. But again, that magic 5 foot distance away from the thing is perfectly fine. You're back down to normal. Oh, and as far as those lithium ion batteries hooked up to your solar system, the most expensive being Tesla Powerwalls, but there are a lot of clones too. They put out a little dirty EMF, but not much. They're AC coupled, so they have to put out a bit. You can be 2 feet away and be in the normal range. But I wouldn't want to have those things stacked in my bedroom. But really, no one's going to have their solar equipment in a living space anyway. Though, you may have been hearing that if you're driving an electric car, you're just bathed in dirty EMF. Well, I'll be reporting on that in a future show, so stay tuned.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.